This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Tim Burton, directed last year's blockbuster, Batman. But his first two films were smaller, idiosyncratic fantasies, Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Beetlejuice. Burton has returned to a smaller scale in his new film, Edward Scissorhands. The movie is set in a generic suburb. Well, maybe not exactly generic. The road at the end of this suburb leads up a steep hill to a Gothic castle. As the movie opens, an Avon lady, played by Diane Wiest, is having no luck selling her cosmetics door to door. So she drives up the hill to the castle and finds a young man with wild hair and a sensitive, innocent face who has scissors instead of hands. Johnny Depp plays Edward Scissorhands. Edward Scissorhands isn't really human. He was created by an inventor, played by Vincent Price, who used to live in the castle. But the inventor died just before he was going to give his creation hands. The Avon lady takes the isolated Edward Scissorhands back to her home in the suburbs. The movie takes the form of a fairy tale. Burton grew up loving monster movies and horror films. I asked him why this time he created a fairy tale.
Well, I'd always liked the idea of fairy tales. I always liked the imagery and fairy tales, myths, fables, things like Hansel and Gretel and Little Red Riding Hood. Even though I liked the imagery, they never really connected with me completely. And I just always had the desire to, you know, make a fairy tale that was, that had all of the, you know, elements, the visual quality of a fairy tale, but, you know, something that maybe would connect a little bit more.
Connect more by being more alienated.
Well, connect more in the sense that, you know, these things, fairy tales always have this wild sort of very visual imagery, and yet you know there's some sort of psychology beneath it, but yet I always had trouble understanding it. That's why I always liked that Bruno Bettelheim book, because it really, explained and opened up what fairy tales are and what they mean.
When and how did you get the image of Edward as a lonely boy, you know, who'd been created in a laboratory with scissors for hands? What came to you first about that, and what was behind the image?
Well, the image sort of came at the time, I think I was in my late teens or early 20s, and you know, that time is always very dramatic, you know, mm-hmm. very melodramatic time of life. And I think it came from a feeling of not feeling like I was connecting with anybody. I mean, it's a fairly universal feeling. I didn't see myself as the only person like this. You know, everybody around me seemed to have varying degrees of the same kind of feeling. So even though, you know, I was still a student, I wasn't doing films or anything, I did like to draw. So it did have graphic implications. It didn't have any filmic at the time.
What's interesting to me that as someone who liked to draw, you had this image of a boy who had scissors for hands, who couldn't use his hands in the way that normal people could, whereas for you, your hands were part of your gift.
Well, yeah, hands, yeah, it's always, it's funny, you know, you start thinking about things, and I don't know, I start to kind of zone out on things, and I start thinking about hands, and then it starts to get, I remember when I saw this movie, I remember going to a drive-in and seeing Fantastic Voyage. I don't remember that, where they shrink down inside to somebody's body.
Yeah.
And it started to freak me out because I just started to think too much about the inside of my body. So the same thing happened with hands. I just started to think a bit too much about it and had to stop. But it had less to do with hands than it did to do with a feeling of not being able to communicate, you know. Again, since I was always fairly quiet and liked to draw, I would communicate pretty much just by drawings and not by speaking.
In the set of Edward Scissorhands, there's a castle at the end of the road of this suburban development. Did you wish that there was something like that in your neighborhood, something as exotic as this winding hill that leads up to an old castle?
Well, there was, you know, it's funny. It's like I think anywhere you live when you're growing up, whatever surroundings you have, there's always something or someone that's strange. There's always the weird guy down the street or the weird old dilapidated house or building or park or cemetery or whatever. There's always something. And So this is just a much more extreme version of that kind of thing.
What was it in your neighborhood?
Oh, we had several things. You know, we had a couple of weird people. We had a cemetery. It was a great park. You know, there's always someone or some old house in the neighborhood that gives, you know, something you got to talk about.
Tim Burton is my guest, and he directed the new movie Edward Scissorhands, as well as Batman, Beetlejuice, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. What were the characteristics of the suburb where you grew up that you wanted to emphasize in the suburb of your new movie?
Well, again, wanting to do a fairy tale, I'd always found or linked certain images of certain sort of things of suburbia to a fairy tale. It's like the Avon lady is sort of the angel, and you know, she's like, it's like this cosmetic hope of the future kind of a thing. And just growing up in a kind of suburbia where it's very close, it's like a little kingdom in a way. You know, it's like a little fairy tale kingdom in the sense that, you know, it's like a real little microcosm. It's got its whole structure and class system, and you know, the kings and queens and dukes and princes of the neighborhood, and just this kind of bizarre imagery that I remember growing up with was, you know, these very white walls with weird ceramic things that nobody knew why they were there hanging on the wall, you know, resin grapes. What does that mean? I mean, it's just all of these very strange, very unusual, you know, images that I always somewhat linked to fairy tale imagery.
Can you describe how the hands for Edward were created?
Well, we wanted to do something that didn't rely heavily on special effects. You know, the most obvious technique would have been to have them mechanical and have like about four guys with cables running them. And since we just wanted to make this a simpler story and not make it so special effects heavy, the person I had do it, Stan Winston, who's great, who's a real good effects guy, designed it with the utmost simplicity in mind, so that the actor could just slip them on and know how it felt to feel that way. I mean, that was the most important thing to me, is that Johnny Depp could put them on and feel it and see what it felt like to have this kind of have these kind of hands. And since he's in every shot, it just made it much simpler. I mean, we'd still be shooting today, I think, if we hadn't done that.
How sharp were the blades on the scissors? And were there any accidents on the set?
Sure. Little pokes. And yeah, I got poked several times. I mean, they weren't real dangerous, but they were as dangerous as he was, you know. you know, even though they were made of a light metal thing, it wasn't, they were still, I got poked a few times.
So were they sharp?
Yeah. I mean, not razor sharp. I mean, I couldn't. I mean, he wasn't giving the crew haircuts and everything, every, you know, 5 minutes between breaks or anything. But they were pretty sharp.
You started making Edward Scissorhands before you made Batman. But do you think you could have completed the movie without having had the success of Batman? Do you think that you would have, that a studio would have let you make the movie?
Yeah, well, you know, that's always a question, and I actually tried to make sure that the studio that I went to, that they wanted to do it as much as I could tell they wanted to do it. You know what I mean? I you never know for sure, and obviously there is a lot of trust based on success and all of that sort of thing. So, but I did try to gauge how much of it was basically that, or how much of it was also that they wanted to do the movie. And I felt very good about that, too. So, yeah, I mean, there's no way to fully know what the percentage is, but, yeah, I'm sure that I know that figures into it, and I had hoped that it didn't figure in too much.
How come Edward Scissorhands wasn't made by Warner Brothers, who made your other three movies?
Well, they didn't. They just passed on it. Which I was happy about. I mean, I didn't want to get into a situation where they felt, you know, they wanted to do something that I, you know, that they didn't want to do. And so, even though I was upset that they didn't want to do it, I ultimately was very glad that they didn't want to do it because, you know, you don't make these things on your own, so you really have to have people with you on something, and Fox was really good about that.
When you started making Scissorhands for Fox, did they give you what they give a lot of directors, which is a list of actors who you have to choose from as the lead, someone with a lot of box office mm-hmm. appeal?
Yeah, well, you go through the lists of people. I mean, they didn't say you got to use somebody from this, but you do go through that, and I understand it too, because I mean they're a studio, they're looking to you know to make their money and all that or whatever, and so but they weren't, you know, you just go through it with them, and you know, I sort of learned something on Beetlejuice, which is to be more open about you know, about casting and meet people and not go into something with a preconception. So I was very open about meeting people and enjoyed that, and was very happy that we arrived with Johnny Depp.
What did you learn from Beetlejuice about casting?
Well, you know, you just, it's like before you get into things, before you really get into making movies, you know, everybody, the biggest thing in Hollywood, everybody likes to talk. Oh, what about so-and-so? Oh, I don't know. I don't like him. I've never liked so-and-so, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. And, you know, until you meet people, well, it's like Michael Keaton. I hadn't really seen any of his movies. I didn't really know him that well. And I don't know. You know, I don't really know. And then I met him and worked with him on Beetlejuice, and I just, you know, it was incredible. And it just, you know, until you meet somebody, and that's what becomes fun, because, you know, you change, people change. It's like acting, or it's, you know, it's, they're playing a character, so it becomes kind of wonderful. Sometimes you can twist something and make somebody something else, and that's actually the most fun. I mean, that really is why it's interesting to me. So I have now a very sort of open opinion or feeling about meeting people and just sort of seeing what they're like.
So who else was on the list for Edward Scissorhands?
Oh, well, you know, who's on the list of any, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter what the part is or what the, you know, there's always the same list, isn't there? I mean, it's,
well,
know,
well,
who
I,
is it
I,
now?
I doubt Arnold Schwarzenegger was on this list, though.
No, there's a little, well, maybe, you know, people like Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, I just, that was sort of the gist of the list.
Could you have imagined the movie with the Toms in it?
Oh, I talked to them, and I enjoyed talking to them very much. As I said, it's funny, especially when you're see, it's different. If it's like a normal human being, it's much easier to talk to somebody and go, yeah, okay, Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, Johnny Depp. But when you're talking about something that's, you're just sort of making up, it's not, you know, it takes a little bit more time for me. I mean, even though I have a drawing or a concept or an idea, you know, you start to imagine somebody as something, and it takes on different personas. I mean, when I met Johnny, I certainly felt he was visually the clearest, you know, and could really relate and got the part. But, you know, you got to go through this other stuff, and it's good. It's not a bad thing to do.
Was Johnny Depp on the list?
Yeah, he was on the list.
Did you used to watch him in 21 Jump Street? I remember
no,
John
I never
Waters.
Saw him.
I remember John Waters telling the story of why he cast him in Crybaby. He said he'd gone to the store and bought up every fanzine he could get his hands on, and that Johnny Depp was on the cover of every one of them. So he realized, yeah, you know, like, if he needed to be true to the genre, he really had to hire Johnny Depp. And, you know, he's really happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, no, I didn't see Jump Street, which I was sort of happy about. So I just met him, sort of just on his own. You know, I just met him, and talked to him, and really he liked him from just talking to him. I mean, he really had passion for it, which was ended up being the main thing. Really, you know, that ended up for me being the thing. You know, it's. For me, it was much safer to say, let's go with somebody that has really feels really strongly about it than somebody who doesn't feel so strongly about it. I think it was more so than other roles. It was much more important to have that than maybe even somebody who is considered bigger box office and was a little bit more hesitant about things.
Now, one of the choices you made is really an homage. You have Vincent Price playing the role of the scientist in the castle who creates Edward Scissorhands. Were you a big fan of Vincent Price's movies when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. Those were the movies that really sort of shaped me and helped me. They were just all those Edgar Allan Poe movies that I just could relate to completely. This just, you know, again, they're like fairy tales. They're abstract. You know, there's something about them that you can relate to, and yet it's certainly nothing literal because, I mean, here's people being buried alive and houses crumbling and caving in, that sort of thing, and people coming back to life. You know, that's not certainly something literal, but there was a very strong feeling, a very strong thing, like that kind of connection you can have with a fairy tale that I had with those movies. And, and the first thing I ever did, a short film called Vincent, which was sort of something about him, he narrated, and so it was the first great experience I had in movies too. So it was he's really been great.
Was Vincent one of the shorts you made for Disney when you were working
there?
What was it like for you working for the Disney studios? You started as an animator, and I guess it was when you got out of school you started to work for Disney for a few years. You feel that you fit into their sensibility? They have a much more upbeat sensibility than you do.
First year I was an animator's assistant and working on The Fox and the Hound, and it just drove me crazy because, number one, I wasn't really good at it, at that sort of thing. And there, you're really called upon to be the total artist and then the total factory worker at the same time. And I just couldn't make those two sides of my brain connect. It just drove me crazy. So I was very lucky. They let me sort of move on to just doing design work and my own things. And it was really nice of them to do. I mean, they didn't... It's kind of unusual circumstance that they let me do that.
What kind of criticisms would they give you?
You mean on my animation?
Yeah, or on your attitude?
Well, luckily, at the time anyway, animators were seen as eccentric, so you could pretty much hang by your heels from the ceiling and nobody would say much. I used to spend a lot of time in a little closet just sitting there in the dark. Nobody said too much. That was actually the best thing about it. I mean, you really could act however you want and not get into too much trouble.
Your first movie was Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And this was really before Pee-wee Herman became a big star. The movie helped him become very well known. What was it like to work with him? Was he in persona at all? I mean, some people, I think, believe that Pee-wee Herman can't tell the difference between Paul Rubens, the real person, and Pee-wee Herman, the persona.
Well, it's not as schizophrenic as that. I think, it's a character he created, so it's something that is he has very much inside. It wasn't like, he is this character, and then he steps off and opens a beer and, starts watching football and has this big, deep voice, or is he always the same? I mean, he just has the character inside, and I think that, he doesn't act that way all the time, but, it's when something is very strong, it's just there, that's probably the best way to say it. It's not as psychotic as whatever.
Do you know why you were asked to direct Batman? You hadn't ever done a big blockbuster before, and this was one of the most hyped and promoted films, I think, in the history of movie making. Were you surprised that you were offered the movie on the basis of Beetlejuice and Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
No, because I had a relationship with Warners, and they knew me, and they knew, I think they felt comfortable with me. It doesn't, with any kind of movie, and especially one with big budgets, it's always going to be a gamble. It's no matter who you have. And so, and that's right. And so I was glad that they just, they were always very supportive of me in that way. And I they should have been, because I think, once you make the decision to let somebody do something, you better just, let them do it, because that's the way it has to happen. So, I think they just felt comfortable because I'd done two movies for them, and basically, you know, had the take on Batman. Batman had been around for like 10 years and with lots of different people attached to it, and I guess lots of different takes on how to do the movie. And I guess they just liked the take that we had on it too. So all of those things combined just, you know, wasn't a problem.
What was the take that you brought to the movie?
Well, you know, there was always the TV show versus the new comic, which was very hardcore and violent and stuff. And I had, you know, I was not a big comic fan, and I basically grew up watching the TV show. And I always felt more like a normal person when it came to Batman, because I wasn't a comic book fan. I liked the TV show, and yet I loved the images of the characters. So I was a real Batman fan. I felt more like a normal, you know, because the factions between, you know, comic book people that are very, very passionate about comics and all hate the TV series, and then most people just know the TV series. The take that we had was somewhere in the middle. It's like to make it big and dark and sort of moody, but not completely cut out the humor, you know, keep it, because that's always been important to me in that, and just to you know, and the Joker was certainly a good avenue for that. So it was, you know, it was the idea to keep it big and dark and dramatic, yet not lose any of the, still have some humor in it.
Getting back to casting again, I thought it was very interesting to cast Michael Keaton as Batman and Jack Nicholson as his nemesis, because there's something very similar, I think, about them facially and also about their acting styles. As a matter of fact, when I saw Michael Keaton in Clean and Sober, he really kept reminding me of Nicholson at his best.
Yeah, well, they both have the same eyebrows.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And maybe hairline also. Well, yeah, formerly, yeah, anyways, before.
They're both actors that just, again, it's my favorite kind of actor. They just do it. You know, they're just fun to watch, and they're fun to work with, and you know, it's just a kind of actor that I really enjoy.
Now, I've read that your mother used to run, or perhaps still runs, a gift shop with a cat motif where everything sold has a cat on it.
Yes.
What did you think of that when you were young?
Well, I'm allergic to cats, so I don't think too much about it.
Well, how did you deal with cute when you were growing up?
Cute. Well, you know, it's just an abstract term to me. I mean, it's like... you know, cute to me means you know, most times something quite horrifying and, you know, disturbing. I don't know.
Did you ever try to freak people out when you were young?
Oh, sure. Oh, we had a whole thing going. You know, we'd always prey upon the younger members of our neighborhood. And we faked a alien invasion in the park, you know, with creating a wreckage of a spaceship and footprints and stuff, and had convinced this kid that aliens had landed. I convinced the kids next door that I had murdered my brother. You know, horrible stuff.
Did your brother know about this?
Oh, yeah, no, he we had a fake fight, and I killed him.
Do you see this as the foreshadowing of your career in movies?
Well, yeah, in a way, because I never had the real desire. I mean, I never had the goal that I wanted to make movies. I just like to do things. You know, I like to fool people, I guess.
Well, Tim Burton, thanks a lot for talking with us about your movies.
Sure.
And Tim Burton's new movie is Edward Scissorhands. He also directed Beetlejuice, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and Batman. Say, are you going to do the sequel, Batman 2?
Oh, I don't. I'm going to take a rest for a while, I think. In fact, I may just sleep here in the radio station. It's very quiet over here. I think I'll just stay here.